This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Odds are good that you've seen plenty of campaign ads on TV, radio, even social media by this point in the election cycle.
Experience is important, and that's true for our Supreme Court, too. Mark Curran has no experience as a judge and is rated not recommended by the Illinois Bar Association.
Nikki Lozinski says she'll fight for the middle class. The truth? She fought to crush Illinois families and small businesses as part of the corrupt Madigan machine.
As Governor J.B. Pritzker's hiring a record number of state police, Darren Bailey voted against it.
All right, tens of millions of dollars have been spent on ads like the one you just heard in the Chicago area this election season alone, and that's before you even take downstate advertising into account. We asked our members of our texting group about political ads yesterday. We heard from plenty of you out there. Betsy in Rock Falls, for example, told us, "I was just telling my husband I cannot wait for the election to be over because of all the ads. Ugh, there are so many." But how do these ads work? What do people understand about them, and what difference do they actually make in elections? Researchers have tried to find answers to those questions, and for this part of our program, we're bringing two of them in to dissect political advertising in 2022. Brett Gordon is professor of marketing at the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University in the Chicago area. He's done research looking at how political ads have affected voter turnout. Brett, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Keith Bockelman. He's professor of political science at Western Illinois University in Macomb. Keith, thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
And Keith, I want to begin with you, and let's talk about the different, maybe we can just begin with sort of a taxonomy of political ads, the different kinds we see. I don't know if you can just talk about the ones we just heard there. How would you characterize those advertisements?
Well, I think you can see kind of a combination typically of positive and negative ads. So that may be one initial way to break those down. The ones you just played tend toward the negative, but sometimes you'll contrast purely negative ads with so-called contrast ads, which the J.B. Pritzker one talking about the state police, that would be an example of a contrast ad where he's trying to contrast his record on a particular issue with that of Darren Bailey. I think one thing, another taxonomy that I think is important that may be lost on consumers of advertising sometimes is the source of funding for the ads. So sometimes you'll have ads from the candidates themselves, and those are the most unregulated. They can pretty much say whatever they want. You'll also have ads from super PACs, which are somewhat more regulated. There can be no, they can advocate for or against particular candidates, but they're not allowed to coordinate directly with the campaign. So for example, Darren Bailey has been fairly dependent on super PAC ads because his direct campaign coffers can't really equal J.B. Pritzker's in the governor's race. So some of the major ads that we've seen supporting Bailey, I guess you could say, would be these super PAC ads. And then another type are ads from 527 groups, and those can only advocate for or against particular issues. They can't really say anything for or against a particular candidate, and so there's even less coordination. So, you know, this can create confusion, I think, for consumers of advertising, but also it can create complexities for the campaigns themselves, because sometimes when there's this lack of coordination with super PAC or 527 organizations, it makes it harder for the campaign to directly get their message out.
Brett Gordon, why are these ads so pervasive? Do they work on people?
Well, let's just back up briefly, but the ads are pervasive because the stakes are so high, of course, for all these races, for the candidates involved, their campaigns and their supporters. They have a lot of money behind them too. In terms of whether they work though, I think you can clearly say that they believe that they work in terms of the people who are running them. I think the simple kind of question though, is, the simple answer is really that they maybe work. It's hard to say that they always work. And finding out exactly when they work and when they don't work has really been the subject of a lot of research among academics for 40 or 50 years, if not more.
Well, that's a great tease, and we need to take a break on the program, but we're going to come back and talk about that and what sort of ads do work, why they don't work, how voters think about them beyond just the general, you know, we often hear that, that sentiment that we heard from our texting group from Betsy in Rock Falls. They're so tired of them, but, you know, would these ads, would candidates be spending these millions of dollars if they were not in some way at some base level effective, whether we want to believe that or not? We're going to continue this conversation with Brett Gordon, who is a professor at Northwestern University, and Keith Bockelman, who is a professor at Western Illinois University. If you want to join our conversation, what are you seeing out there? What do you think about these television ads, these campaign ads? Is it wall to wall in your part of Illinois, as I know it is? Certainly in Chicago, I was visiting family up there, but also in other parts of the state with hotly contested elections. 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation. That's 800-222-9455, or tweet us at 21st Show, at 21st Show. More to come on political ads in just a moment. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking about political ads and what research tells us about them.
Good things come in small packages, like my mom.
I'm Susana Mendoza. I've worked hard to help people and fix our state's finances to get Illinois ready for its growth spurt.
I'm proud to cast my ballot to reelect J.B. Pritzker.
I can trust this guy.
Yeah, farmer from Southern Illinois. Yeah. Farmer from Southern Illinois.
We're talking about these ads with Keith Bockelman, a professor of political science at Western Illinois University, and Brett Gordon, a professor of marketing at Northwestern University, who has studied how ads affect turnout in particular. You can join us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. And Brett, let's talk a little bit about your research. What have you found about how political ads play a role in, for example, voter turnout?
Sure. Well, let me actually just back up a little bit to make sure we kind of understand when you ask the question, do political ads work or not? What everyone should realize is that what a campaign really wants is they want to make sure that they win the campaign, win the election. And that's going to matter a lot more for them when they're in a very close race with whoever their opponent is. So we tend to see a lot more intensive campaigning in terms of these political ads in races that are very, very close down to the wire. And what that means is for a political ad to work there, it doesn't really need to work very often. You know, they're going to show these political ads on TV, online, everywhere. And if, you know, 1 in 1,000 people is really affected by one of these ads and maybe, you know, changes who they're going to vote for as a result of that ad, or decides to come out to vote on the election and they wouldn't have otherwise, that's actually considered a pretty successful ad. So I think a lot of listeners might see these ads and think, you know, this doesn't do anything to me. I'm not going to change my opinion or who I'll vote for because I see this ad. And for 999 people, that's totally fine. But if there's just that one person, kind of that needle in a haystack, if you will, who is affected by these ads, then that can be successful for a campaign that's, you know, trying to win 50.5% of the vote to 49.5. So what a lot of work has done over the years is try to understand, do political ads encourage partisans, people who support a candidate anyway, to turn out for that candidate to vote? And among people who are going to vote, does it shift who they'll decide to vote for? Does it persuade them to like a different candidate than they would have otherwise? And going back, there was a lot of concern that, you talked about, Keith mentioned the negative ads, and we just heard some examples of those negative ads. There's been concern that negative advertising might depress voter turnout. It makes people who support a given candidate kind of less likely to want to show up to the polls on election day. And what I've seen in terms of current research, both by myself and others, is that we find less evidence for that to be the case these days, that advertising doesn't have so much of an effect on who will come out to, on whether someone comes out to vote or not, but it can have some small but meaningful effects on influencing who you will vote for. And as I said, if they can influence, if campaign can influence 1 out of 1,000 people, you do that enough times and pretty soon you're winning elections.
Keith, let me ask you about that, because 1 out of 1,000, that's an incredible ratio. I know another political scientist who told me once that they say some number of voters get most of their information about politics, at least maybe local and state politics, from political ads. Do you share that understanding of how these things work?
I do. And, you know, I think one other thing the research shows, in addition to what Brett had already talked about, is that political ads have the most influence on the voters who know the least. So from that perspective, you know, I talked to my students about this a little bit when I knew I was going to come on the program and just try to get their reaction to political ads. And most of them said, you know, I just tune it out. I don't listen to them. I don't pay any attention. It doesn't make any difference to me. But a few did. And I guess what really struck me is that the ads that we've seen and heard about the impact of the Safety Act, particularly the ones that are critical, seem to be breaking through. So as Brett said, you only need to, you know, influence a few people in a close race. So I think by and large, for most people, these political ads are having the impact that you mentioned with someone in your text feed that had said, you know, I'm just tired of it and I'm turned off by it, but it doesn't need to influence that many people. One other thing I was going to say, kind of related to what Brett had talked about earlier, is that there's an old saw in campaigns is that half of advertising money is wasted. We just don't know which half. So it could be much more than that is wasted. But again, if you only need to move a few people and these few people are the voters that have the least information, political ads can be effective that way.
Yeah, low information voters, as they're known in the industry. Let's go to the phones. Deanna is on line 4 from Rockford. Deanna, thank you for calling in.
Good morning. What I'm wondering is, why aren't the political commercials vetted for accurate data? Doesn't it the same for advertisers? Couldn't they say, oh, take this pill and you'll cure or prevent cancer, take one a day? I mean, that could open a plethora of advertisers. Why don't they have to conform the same?
Interesting question, Deanna. Thanks for that. Brett, do you want to take that one?
Well, I could take that one. I think Keith might be a little bit familiar with it, though.
Okay, well, I can pivot. And Keith,
a short answer, it's a First Amendment issue. So product advertising can be regulated in ways that require it to be at some level factual. Due to the First Amendment and its protections of political speech, those regulations do not apply to political advertising. So to give you a short answer, that's why.
Well, and this goes beyond I mean, there were these ads from, we talked about these independent expenditure groups separate from the campaigns, and Republican nominee for Governor Darren Bailey has had not a lot of spending from his own coffers, but from this group that is backing him called People Who Play by the Rules PAC, which is run by Dan Proft. People might remember our conversation on these pink slime newspapers, these political ads essentially that look like newspapers that were mailed out all over the state. Same guy is behind these ads. They had an ad that depicted somebody being attacked in Chicago that was pulled from TV there. I don't know if you can talk, Keith, about that situation in particular or in general. I mean, ads are sometimes taken down by TV stations.
They are. And so, you know, I as I understand it, I'm not in the Chicago media markets. I've seen some of these ads, but not directly. And the stations down here aren't running them that I can tell. But I think that the stations, as I understand it, voluntarily said they could remove that. So that's not the government regulating speech in the way I think that the caller was suggesting. It's the individual TV stations themselves deciding we don't want to run this.
Yeah, fair point. So, go ahead.
Yeah, so I know that for local TV stations, which is where we do see the vast majority of advertising, of TV advertising for political candidates these days, they have to give reasonable access to the candidates and even to competing candidates for kind of a similar schedule and run of ads and prices, but they don't have that same obligation for issue ads run by issue groups. So to the extent that you might be thinking about those kinds of ads, a station has the right to say, I don't want to run an ad of that sort. But if it's run by, if it's being run by or promoted by the candidate themselves, then they have this reasonable access clause that kicks in.
Interesting. So that's a disadvantage for a candidate who has one of these independent expenditure groups spending on their behalf as opposed to spending themselves. Let me mention another text we got. This one was from Denise in Moroa, who said, it seems most ads are trying to strike fear into the listener or are ugly and angry. I can see why many are turning to anger and violence. Many ads seem to promote this. And Brett, I wonder if you can talk about that in a general way. Are there certain types of ads that are more effective with voters than others?
Sure. You know, the fear ads, what people would call fear appeals, so appeals to people's fears. You know, the truth is that fear is a very strong emotion. So ads that appeal to your emotions, especially things like fear, do tend to motivate people to take action. It's a lot easier to get someone to take an action to help them prevent something that they foresee as being a really negative outcome than to encourage them to take a very positive step. And that's I think just a lot of human psychology, whether it's good or bad, I don't know. But these ads do tend to be people think that they're very effective, and they have a very long history in political advertising going back to, you know, the founding of the United States. So I don't think that it's going to change, unfortunately. And we have seen a general move towards more negative ads over the last 20 or so years.
Keith, we're in this era where social media targeting has allowed candidates to get a lot more specific in the ads that they send out or the ways that they try and reach certain voters by their demographic characteristics or their interests. Can you talk about that and how that interplays with these sort of broad-based television ads and how, you know, candidates might be spending might be shifting in the future?
Well, I think you're certainly seeing that a shift toward what you would call broadcasting, where you're running it on network TV in particular, which is obviously appealing to a fairly broad audience, toward more narrow casting, which is focusing on particular demographics, you could find it. Now, I would say, I don't think that this is perfect yet. When I was talking to my students about this, one student told me he kept getting ads for the Senate race in Wisconsin, and you know, he's not even registered to vote, and of course doesn't live in Wisconsin. But I was struck, a friend of mine told me that he is married to an Indian American, and that she had received an ad the other day basically saying that Biden was prejudiced against Indian Americans. And so, you know, that's a very micro-targeted message, obviously. And I think you're seeing more and more of this. And to the extent that they work, you can get a bigger bang for your buck if you're targeting, you know, particular groups or people with particular interests with your messages rather than spread it out across broadcast TV more broadly.
Brett, we're coming to the end of our time together today. Big picture, are political ads good or bad for democracy? I don't know, maybe if that's not a swing you're willing to take, how do they affect our democracy, small d democracy?
That's a great question, and I think that is the big question. And I wish I had an answer for that one. You know, Keith mentioned that, you know, a lot of people might actually get a lot of their information about politics from ads. And so to the extent that these ads do convey information, then that seems to have a beneficial effect. That could seem to have a beneficial effect, and it's the right of candidates and their supporters to pay their money to try to educate citizenry who would agree with them. On the other hand, of course, I think what we all kind of feel, and your listeners kind of indicated, is that the negative ads, the sort of the fear mongering, could that have detrimental effects and maybe further divide us in that way? And it's such a difficult question to answer, but I think it's good that we continue to try to answer it in whatever way possible.
Keith, do you want to take a swing at that one?
Well, I, you know, just to kind of follow up on some of the things Brett said, there is some evidence that, you know, even though ads are obviously playing on emotion, that it, to the extent that they are tied to factual matters, that is they're going to be more effective. So as I mentioned earlier, my students really seem to plug in on some of the things going on with the Safety Act and specific factual things about the Safety Act around early to mid-September. And I started getting questions about this. And so I think to the extent that that's happening, ads can be good for democracy if they are providing this factual information. And I think sometimes they do. I also share some of Brett's concerns that to the extent that you're just playing on fear and misrepresenting things. I guess one ad from last summer that really stuck with me during the Republican primary for governor, I kept getting these flyers that said that Darren Bailey was in the tank or in cahoots with Michael Madigan. And it struck me that this is just completely ridiculous. I think these came from the Richard Irvin campaign, or at least directly or indirectly. And, you know, anybody who knows anything about Illinois politics knows that this isn't really true. And so I think like a lot of things in life, it's a mixed bag. I guess I would encourage voters to look for a variety of information sources, maybe tune into debates, look at fact-checking websites. Sites like PolitiFact do a good job now of fact-checking ads. So I think those are...
And with that good advice, we're going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid. Okay. Keith Bachelman is a professor at Western Illinois University. Brett Gordon, professor at Northwestern. Thank you so much for being with us today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. We'll be back again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.